from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies for bringing us through the afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 28th of March, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Alan Cawley, David Connolly and Mark Landon reflect on the French visit to Dublin, including that save.
Another corner for Ireland, here it comes. Good one too. And it's a wonderful save again as the head of Nathan Collins is denied. And a yellow card has been brandished as well. Oh, what a header that was, but it's going into the top corner. I thought that was 1-1.
Oh, unbelievable save, John. I was off my seat, I've got to be honest with you. Saw this a mile away, Nathan Collins rose majestically in the middle of the goal, actually angled it to the corner. And Mignon never felt he was going to make that save. It's a brilliant save, great athleticism from the French keeper. Has to spring to his right-hand side, John, throw his right arm up. What an unbelievable save at this stage of the game.
Kenny Cunningham has seen it from a mile away. We'll hear from the Irish camp in the Women's Six Nations after the tough defeat in Wales. We'll reflect more on Johnny Sexton's Leinster career as it hangs in the balance. And in Gaelic football, Neil Ewing picks up our Allianz League analysis as we move into Division 3 and Division 4 reflection, as well as managerial news from Donegal. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Well, Ruby, well. Are you over that result?
Am I over it? I think I am, because, Shane, I think all anybody can do in any sport is do their very best. And I don't think you could say anything else about the Irish team last night, Alan Cawley, could you?
I agree totally, Ruby, yeah. Very good performance. We all know the limitations in terms of what Stephen is picking from and the level that they're playing at. And when you take that into context with the opposition that you're facing last night, they did exactly as you said. They gave absolutely everything, acquitted themselves really well, really kind of took the game to France to a point near the end. Obviously, when you just want to hang in the game and stay in the game, and that was the case, obviously. And we had a goal with 15 minutes to go, and we were really unlucky not to get the equaliser. But overall, I think it was a good performance.
David Connolly, would you agree with Alan Cawley's sentiments?
Yeah. I think I'm very much with that. I thought they were brilliant, to be honest. And you know, you got to remember, this is the first step on a long road to qualifying. You know, and if Stephen had gone for broke any earlier and conceded maybe 2-3 goals, you know, like the Dutch did, then that could really count against us in the final reckoning. So I think he had to play it exactly how he played it, which is very cautious. You know, try and make it as hard as possible for the French, counter quickly when they could, and they broke play up, which they did really, really well. So there was loads of positives. And look, some of those lads were coming into that game. Like, Ogbeni was coming into that game after 45 minutes, the game against Cardiff. You know, there's a lot of lads there didn't have a lot of game time. Okay, they had the Latvia game, but I'm hoping by the time June comes around, a few of these players will have more minutes in their legs. We might need some goals, so it might be a different sort of performance we need. We might need more confidence in and around goal, you know. But hey, look, I thought they were brilliant. You know, I thought it was a really, really good performance, and I thought it was really finely balanced in terms of Stephen got it right. You know, you can't go for the jugular, albeit at home against France, because okay, if we lose 1-0, you know, okay, we'll take that maybe, because the French are going to put a lot of goals past a lot of teams. And our goal difference might be the determining factor. You never know.
Alan, it was the reality of how Ireland played that impressed me. As David says, they didn't go toe-to-toe. They tried to frustrate the French. They defended with aggression. And it was just the reality. They knew they were second best, but they made it really, really hard.
Yeah, probably a word you wouldn't associate, Ruby, with Stephen Kenny is pragmatic, but he is a little bit as well, and you have to be in management, because he's not no fool either. And if you're going up against one of the best teams in the world in terms of look at the players that they have, despite the approach that Stephen wants, and he does, and I know him, and he wants to play an attacking brand of football, and he wants to get after teams and be on the front foot and create chances and score goals. We've all heard his sound bites from press conferences, and we've all watched him manage. But if you're playing against superior opposition, you have to be clever and be sensible with the approach, and that's exactly what they did. At times it was for large spells, it was a back five. You had the four narrow in front, and obviously Ferguson up front on his own, and we contained. That was one of the words I was sitting beside Shane at the game last night. We were having a chat at half time, and that was the thing. We contained France quite comfortably in that first half, and really good containment. It wasn't a case of just planting everybody behind the ball and we were camped on the edge of the box. There was a really good shape, really good organisation about us. And the only thing that disappoints me really, Ruby, is that when you come out at the start of the second half and you're hoping for more of the same, it's just, it was so avoidable, the goal. The concession of the goal was so sloppy, in the sense that you do want to play. And of course, as I said, Stephen encourages that from all the players, especially the boys at the back, and he wants to build up attacks, Josh Cullen in midfield. But there's a time and a place as well to play, and the onus then is on the player to make the right decision, and football is all about decision making. And Josh Cullen, who's quite mature in the way he plays the game, you just can't play a square pass like that across the edge of the box, and it was just waiting for it to be intercepted and cut out, and unfortunately that's where we fell down. But bar that, you'd have to say the approach from Stephen got it 100% right. I felt the personnel that he played as well. I might have been inching towards Smallbone maybe off Ferguson, but I think he was right to go with Ogbeni because of his energy and his legs, and he had a great game, Ogbeni, and he's had a lot of great games for Ireland. He's done really well under Stephen Chidozie Ogbeni, and there's been other standout players as well, but I thought he was the real standout. So I think the manager definitely got it right, and we were unlucky. You go back to that then, the 10-15 minute kind of throw the kitchen sink at them near the end, and they were hanging on a little bit, France, towards the end. And of course, you only have to look when the final whistle was blown, Ruby, all the players ran to the goalkeeper, four or five of them. They knew that he had bailed them out. He pulled off an unbelievable save, and they were delighted to get out with the 1-0.
My loyalties are torn between Ireland not winning and the goalkeeper union.
That's it. Was some save, to be fair. It was some save.
I was flicking through all the headlines this morning, and a few of them are, despite defeat, Ireland fired a warning shot at group rivals in their quest to qualify. Chidozie Ogbeni carries the fight against France. Benjamin Pavard's superb strike helps France deny spirited Republic of Ireland. But the one that caught my eye, it's the actual tongue-in-cheek website of Waterford Whispers that said, pundits expressing anger at the fact an Irish team featuring Championship and League One players didn't dominate and pin down France for 90 minutes will be offered free head exams by the HSE. And yes, that is completely tongue-in-cheek. But David Connolly, is the myth that Stephen Kenny put style over substance finally dispelled looking at that 90-minute performance?
Yeah, look, I think so. I mean, you know, everything that Alan said there, you know, Bennett outstanding. There was, some really good performances. Now, what I would say is this, right? There's setting up before the game, and then there's in-game management. And there's a couple of things I just picked out on the in-game management, which I think he might look back on and go, we could have done things a little bit differently. So one of them was, we had a lot of free kicks, right? We had an awful lot of free kicks. And if you look at the deep defensive line France took, so France went, you know what, Ireland are a threat. They're big, they're a threat of set pieces. So we'll take our defensive line. They were almost on top of their goalkeeper from like any sort of free kick in the French half. They knew the ball was coming in. Now, I think in game then, Keith, you know, Stephen Kenny got to be looking at and going, well, you know what? They're set up to head this clear already. And we did not look a threat on any of those free kicks. Now, if we're gonna win a lot of free kicks, and teams are knowing, like the good teams, your France, your Hollands, they're going to be launching the ball in the box. We need to be a little bit cleverer. You know, we need to be working on the training ground, right? Assessing in game. Look at that French line. It's so, so deep. No matter where you put that ball, the French are in the ascendant. They're on the front foot here, coming onto it to head it out. They didn't have a high defensive line. And I felt that was something we could have tweaked in the game. As soon as we saw their defensive line, we could have played a short one across the box, worked it a bit deeper, get to the byline, put the ball in from a different angle. But it kind of disappointed me a little bit, because I think they're the fine margins that we are going to need in games to go and win them. You know, because I think we were set up brilliantly before the game. You know, the starting team, okay, we could have played, it doesn't matter, you know, a certain player in a different position possibly. I thought Jason Knight had a couple of times he could have used that overlapping run. We didn't have a natural left footer out on that side. It was a bit more balanced when James McClain came on. But little things like the free kicks and the corners, you knew they were probably going to be our best route to goal. And out of all the things, I thought they were probably the most disappointing. But I don't want that to tarnish what was a really good performance. But I think when they look back on that, they'll go, you know, we need to be brighter, because the second half kickoff was really bright. You know, I don't know if you watched the second half kickoff. Normally teams go backwards. We played a little square pass, came out the other side to the right wing, and bang, we took France by surprise. And I just thought, the free kicks, we could have done that on a lot of the free kicks, just mix it up, change the angle, got into a deeper position rather than just launching the ball straight on top of them. And that's probably the only little thing I felt was disappointing.
Alan, would you agree, or were Ireland set up I felt, I've watched one or two of the corners, I'm not in the same league as you guys to assess it, but when the French headed it out, once if not twice, Ireland played it all the way back to Bazunu. They weren't going to get caught on the counter. Is that why maybe they didn't adapt in game management?
Yeah, possibly, Ruby, but I'm with David on, I know the two best chances came from Nathan Collins' header and obviously the one just prior to that as well from Alan Brown, and they were great deliveries, but the deliveries on the night were disappointing from Josh Cullen. There was one on after 40 minutes as well, I think it was Ogbene chased the ball into a corner, no chance of winning it, and turned a bad ball into a good ball and won a corner, and you're thinking here's our opportunity now, because for we were dominated obviously in terms of possession in the first half, and this was the first time that we kind of broke out and had a chance, and they took a short corner and the chance was gone, and I was so frustrated with it because I was thinking here's our chance now, because we're not going to carve them open in terms of creating chances against the opposition that we are. And even that point, I have to go back to that, Shane, what you just read out there, even though it is tongue in cheek, it's so true for anybody who sat at home or have watched Ireland, no matter if Stephen Kenny is in charge or Pep Guardiola, that was thinking that we were going to go out and take on France toe to toe in terms of possession and dominate the game. That was never going to happen. The way the game played out last night was exactly how I always knew it was going to play out, and it would play out against any superior opposition that we're going to play, and then we have to take our chances when they come in terms of maybe the last 10-15 minutes if we're in the game. And that's been going on for years and years with Ireland. That's not a new thing, no matter who the manager is.
But that's, sorry to cut you off, but that's the belief that Stephen Kenny's instilling in that manager in the team as a manager. And when's the last manager to do that? And I'm not like picking out individuals. You go back, Mick McCarthy, Martin O'Neill, Noel King had a match, Trapattoni, Don Givens, Steve Staunton, Brian Kerr, Don Givens, McCarthy, Charlton, own hand, 1980 to 85, you'd have to need to go back to then.
And that's what I'm saying, Stephen is instilling that, but just because he's instilling that and telling us that's how we're going to play, we're not going to go out and take on France and dominate the ball for 90 minutes, never. That's never going to happen, Shane. I'm sorry, but it's never going to happen, no matter who we play in terms.
But is there an issue in him saying it though?
No, I've no problem with him saying he's 100% right, and we're trying to change in terms of the approach that we're playing, and we will play teams of a similar standard, and we're much better in possession and much better on the ball. But what I'm saying is any time we face one of the top countries, we're not going to keep the ball as well as what we might do against them. And that's just purely down to ability of what France have compared to what we have. That's just a fact. So the way it played out last night, and I have no concerns or no qualms ever when we play these teams. I worry now for the games coming up against the likes of Greece and Gibraltar, because any Irish player, and David will tell you, playing in teams all over the years, they'll always get up for these games, and you have no problem playing against superior opposition. And that's why we've had some of our best nights against these type of teams. And last night could have been something similar. It's the ones now that are coming up against the teams that we're hoping that we're better than, or that we're similar standard to, as I say, Greece, Gibraltar, these teams, they're the ones that we have to be winning, and they're the ones we haven't been winning or doing as well against. The likes of Latvia the other night were comfortable 2-0 up, let a sloppy goal in, and then it's back 2-2 and you're making hard work for it. So last night, I'm not one bit surprised how we played last night, because all the boys, they're such an honest bunch and a good group as well, like all Irish players, to be fair. And that's why they raised their game last night. I thought France were a little bit off. Maybe they just strolled into Dublin thinking we'll turn these over, and they had that kind of blasé attitude about them a little bit. But I'd never worry about them, and that's why the way the game panned out last night, it wasn't one bit surprising.
David, do you think France are blasé, or Ireland just frustrated them?
I think it might be, I would say that I think Ireland did very well and had their game plan set up great. I think the challenges Stephen faced in this game is, you know, now he's got Evan Ferguson, right? He almost feels like, you know, you have to play him every game. You've got to remember, he's only 18. He had the game against Latvia. If maybe Michael Obafemi had more minutes in his legs, you know, would Michael Obafemi have had... Would he have been able to beat a battering ram for 60, 70 minutes to then bring on Evan Ferguson when you're throwing the kitchen sink at them, you know, and launching maybe more balls into the box, because Evan was off when actually we needed Evan on, you know? Now, I think he took Evan off because, I mean, to me, at times I look at Evan and he took a lot of physical force from those two centre-halves, massive hulking centre-halves, you know, and he was up against them, you know, 60, 70 minutes, whatever it was, you know. But I think he was kind of handcuffed a little bit, Stephen, because his other forward option just haven't had enough game time. So, you know, Michael Obafemi playing like, you know, 30 minutes against Man City in the cup, or 12 against Hull, he can't go and play him against France. Whereas, actually, if he'd have had minutes under his belt, you know, would Obafemi have been a better outlet for 60, 70 minutes and then Evan come on? Because Evan's played an awful lot of football for a youngster. And I think it was a game of such magnitude. I think it was It was one of those where I think Evan did great, but I think he, I would have maybe liked to have had a battering ram, someone to run the channels, maybe an Obafemi if he'd had more minutes in his legs. And I think, he's kind of, he's been handcuffed a little bit, Stephen, with those lads that have got minutes in their belt because they didn't have enough. Yeah, whether it's Matt Doherty or whoever, not enough game time for the lads. And I think he's a big ask. So I think the quality of performance and everything else was great. What I would say is, if we're not going to play out, which we didn't at times the other night, and we're going to go from back to front, our whole team was so spread out, there was a chasm in the middle of the park, which is very unlike Stephen, because what he didn't want to do is leave loads of space in behind for France because they're so quick. So it meant we were kind of caught between two stools. That's probably the way he wanted to play and probably the way that he did play, which was being deeper, denying space in behind, but it meant there was a massive area in the middle of the park. And look, we dealt with it pretty well, but I think for him, looking back on it, it'll go a couple of times, went back to front, we lost possession, then suddenly look at the middle of the park and wow, there was an awful lot of space there for France to play in. But look, I thought we did very, very well, so I'll be pretty happy. And I think come Greece, come Gibraltar and stuff, when we need goals, hopefully those lads, Michael Obafemi's got more minutes, Ida will be banging the goals and we'll have more confident players. And I think Stephen's a confident type of manager. I think he'll get those lads confident to go and score goals when we need them. And the Gibraltar game would be a big one because we need to score like 3 or 4 in that game, that's for sure.
Alan, how big a night was it for Seamus Coleman?
He was brilliant, Ruby. We were here, actually, you were with us last week and we were speaking about Jonathan Sexton, and he's our Jonathan Sexton, Seamus Coleman. He's absolutely phenomenal. You think of the service and all the years he's put in and the consistency that he's played at year after year at the highest level in the Premier League. And there was a doubt, they were saying that he was carrying a knock into the game as well, but he shows up supposedly against the greatest player that's playing the game at the moment, Mbappe, and there Seamus goes out and just does his usual thing and puts in his usual 8/10 performance. He was absolutely brilliant and he's been great over the years, and I think as well, even listening to his comments afterwards, I think he's brilliant for the young lads around the place as well. And lots of people speak about that. It's not only the influence that he has on the pitch where he's always outstanding and so reliable, but it's also off the pitch, particularly with a young group as well. So I think Seamus, he showed up. And I actually felt the argument for putting him in the team that he may play as one of the three centre-halves, the right side, where he's been playing for Everton. But obviously played him wing back, and some people might think, does he have the legs? And obviously, as I say, you're playing against Mbappe, but I thought he was brilliant on the night. Very, very good.
You mentioned it, 7 or 8 out of 10. 6 out of 10, according to L'Equipe.
Was that all? Yeah.
That's a high rating for them.
Dash, he's a steady 8 all with Seamus, and that's the beauty of him. You know what you're getting exactly. So reliable, so dependable, and they're worth their weight in gold, those type of players.
Dave, I think any fella that can come back from a broken leg and keep killing Mbappe quiet should be getting 10 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. Look, he was excellent. I wouldn't be taking much heed of L'Equipe, that's for sure. And Seamus is a proper warrior, a proper leader. And when you've got a team full of a lot of youngsters, Gavin Bazunu would take confidence from that game because he's had a tough season at Southampton, but he made a couple of good saves you'd expect him to make, right? But good saves. And if you compare, our side to, let's say, Holland. And I looked at how Holland got on the other day. They conceded their first goal almost same as we did. Square ball across the pitch. France cut it out. They go and break and score. They've got Jasper Cillessen in goal. They're talking they've got a goalkeeper crisis in Holland. Their national team is getting a lot of criticism. Now, look, that might change by the time, in a few months' time. But if I look at where we are compared to where some other sides are, I don't know. I think they'll take a lot of confidence from this, and I think we'll be in a good place come June. I really do.
Just on the Kylian Mbappe and Seamus Coleman keeping Mbappe quiet. In Kylian Mbappe's last 61 games for club and country in which he's played at least 45 minutes, the only two sides who have stopped him from having a shot on target were England in December,
England
and Ireland last night.
I know. Yeah. I mean, look, that's brilliant. Look, you saw his two goals against Holland just a couple of days before that, right? And he's got the captaincy. So he probably can't be in any better place than what he is at the moment, Kylian Mbappe. And obviously, Seamus does great against him, and put him on the deck a couple of times and he's moaning and, he got out tight areas, Seamus. They all did really, really well to stop. I mean, you look at the bench, the lads that come on for them. They got players that have been talking, they're going to be bought for 100 million pounds and stuff like that. I mean, come on. I mean, I thought he was brilliant.
I think as well, Dave, really, really well. Yeah, I think as well, what helped Seamus as well was the endeavour with Knight and Malumbi as well. Now, this is where we flip the argument over. It was a perfect game for them because the energy and the legs that they give you, and obviously Ogben as well, the great digging him out and helping him on that side as well. And they covered so much ground, those two, and they're brilliant, and they get the crowd going and win tackles and all. But that's a game perfect for them because obviously France have so much of the ball, and they're the fellas that are working hard to try and negate the space and win the ball back for you. When you flip that over, and this is kind of the debates we'll have around the Greece game and Gibraltar, now you're looking for a fella that's going to come in and maybe create a chance for you. And can we get one of those into the midfield? And do you sacrifice a Knight or a Malumbi, who I'm a big fan of Knight, but is that mean a small one comes in against Greece or Gibraltar or someone like that? So,
well, I mean, yeah, I mean, look, Will did brilliant against Latvia, right? And like I say, I think different games require different things, but if we're reviewing the French game, I think, you know, by and large, everything was done brilliantly to contain them, you know, and it really was. But obviously those games, as I touched on earlier, you know, whether it's Greece, which will be a difficult one, you know, Gibraltar at home will have to score, I think, 3 or 4 goals if we've got any real aspirations to be finishing close to, you know, second whatever in the group. You know, we're going to need some goals and creativity. So that was where the likes of Will, I'm sure by the end of the season, Will Smallbone would have had a superb end to it with Stoke, and hopefully some of the others, Michael Obafemi by then, might have played more minutes. And, you know, because Michael can do something out of nothing. You know, he can, as we've seen, he can crush one in from 25 yards out. You know, he's got a bit of unpredictability about him. Burnley might be promoted by then. You know, hopefully our attacking players by then are in a better position.
We do have Mark Langdon on the line as well. Mark, you've been listening to us discuss this match through completely green eyes for the last 15 or 20 minutes. Are we getting overly excited about Ireland, or what do you, your neutral view, see?
No, I think that it was, you know, in defeat, that there were still a lot of positives. And I think it was very interesting that the Juventus midfielder, Adrien Rabiot, said afterwards that any team would have struggled playing against Ireland last night. It was they all thought it was a very difficult game, and I don't think it was a case of them underestimating Ireland at all. You know, they just found it difficult to break through, and the way that Ireland played and the way that they limited the chances definitely, I think left an impact on France. And if any of them did think it was going to be easy, they soon realised it wasn't. And I honestly don't think it was a case of France taking the game lightly. I think Ireland just played very well, and, you know, had Mike Mannion not managed to make that save late on, I think that maybe a point would have been sort of fair enough for Ireland. So no, I think that you can sometimes in these instances get too excited by defeats, and, you know, ultimately you do need results at some stage. But I think there were a lot of positives to take out of that performance last night.
On the wider discussion of Ireland's group, I know we've Greece away in June, Gibraltar in Dublin in the 19th of June, Greece on the 16th of June, then we France, but then the Dutch in September. Is it a case of come September they'll be in a much better place, Mark, or, you know, we're probably rueing that we couldn't have faced the Dutch now?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, Gibraltar, I know they put up a decent effort against Netherlands and, you know, only lost 3-0, and there were a couple of Nathan Ake goals, but Netherlands had 52 shots in that game, you know, and 80-odd% possession. So it was a really easy 3-0. So I don't envisage any problems against Gibraltar. I wouldn't underestimate Greece completely. I think they showed up quite well in sort of, you know, under Gus Poyet, that they definitely looked like a team that had been improving, and, you know, without qualifying for major tournaments. So I definitely wouldn't take that game lightly, but there's no doubt that it gets easier from here on in, because Netherlands, I think, are in a team that's definitely in some kind of transition, and if you want to be playing in major tournaments, then you have to be able to beat a nation like Greece. What I would say is that Greece are probably thinking the same about Ireland, and thinking, you know, that's a game, you know, and doubleheader that we need to be taking at least 4 points from. So, you know, it's there's definitely, I think, a sort of spot available there, because the Dutch definitely, man for man, are a better team than both Ireland and Greece, but I wouldn't say they're in the best shape at the moment. Now, maybe it changes over the next year, but, you know, they look more vulnerable to me than they were under Louis van Gaal heading into that World Cup.
Alan, Greece, Athens, 12th of June or 16th of June, that's going to be hot and awkward.
Absolutely. I was only reading about it today. Greece, that time here, tends to be in the 30s. Oh. So,
be a few no
Steve,
better for you.
Steve Staunton on Orlando moments.
That's Malahide Marina weather for you, Colly.
Yeah, Mr. Malahide would be fine in that, but I'm not sure about the players over in Greece. But you're right, Ruby. It just throws up a totally different challenge in terms of it'll be a tough game anyway. I agree with Mark. We're not good enough to underestimate anyone, never mind kind of Greece, as I say. And I think Stephen will be fully aware of that. But I do think it wouldn't be a bad thing if France blitzed the group, and we're fighting it out with obviously Greece and the Netherlands, and especially if they're having a tough period at the moment, and hopefully that continues for our sake. But I definitely think the Greece game, and these, as I said, are the games I worry about. I never worried about last night, because they'll always show up, the Irish players, and they'll always give a good account of themselves and be passionate. Plus, last night's game is not going to define our campaign or our season either. It would have been unbelievable to get a draw and a great start to the campaign, but I still think we come out of it with loads of credit and we can build on the campaign going forward. But I do worry, not only with just the weather situation, I do worry about the Greece and Gibraltar games as well, because as I say, they're the ones that we tend to come unstuck in. But hopefully that's not the case. A lot of chat afterwards from the players as well is that there's been a marker laid down now in terms of the standard and what they want to reach every game, and that should be a given anyway. It shouldn't take a performance like that last night to say that's the standard we need to reach. They should be showing that against every opposition. So hopefully they can take that and build on it, Ruby. But the weather itself in Greece, it's going to be it's going to be a tough night, and they're the games that we have to pick up the points in.
So David, do you head off to Greece then and play similarly to how you played last night, make the Greeks do all the running and hope you can rob 3 points on the way out the door?
Well, I mean, I think Stephen, we want to dominate the ball, because you know, if you've got the ball, then you've got a better chance of doing what you want and scoring with it. I'd imagine, you know, for example, if you look at how Michael Johnson played when certainly against Latvia, I know the France game, but yeah, he had a couple of really nice touches. Okay, we didn't see too much of him after that, but I think for the Greece game, he's got to get the balance right, because he has to get enough creativity on the pitch to go and score the goals, knowing that, I think, I wouldn't say Gibraltar's going to be a walkover, but look, we're going to beat them, okay? It's just whether we get 3 or 4. So the Greece game will be one he'll have to balance and make sure that he has enough creativity on the pitch that sets us up. And, you know, some of these lads that, say, played against Latvia, which, you know, they'd laid a little bit of a marker down, came on, had an impact. The subs came on again, had another impact against France. Going into that Greece game, at least he knows that, you know, he's got 2 games to go on. Lads coming in who've had an impact, and if needs be against Greece, they can come on and do the same. And as I say, I think between now and then, it's really important for Stephen, these lads get more minutes under their belt, so he's not handcuffed with what he can do, you know. Because I thought for this period, you know, it's the longest international break, I thought he's dealt a really difficult hand in terms of the lads, the minutes they played to go and get something against France. So I think we'll take that. The Greece game, let's see how it goes a bit closer to the time.
Gents, I'm completely aware that we've only played 90 minutes of qualifying football. However, you're all experts in your own field. Mark, if I come back to yourself first, do you personally believe Stephen Kenny and this Irish squad have the ability to qualify for the championship?
I think they have the ability. I think it's probably going to be, I've been quite positive about Ireland, but I would just say that the Dutch probably will finish second, I would say, in that group. So I think the hand that's been dealt, you know, the problem here, rather than a genuine sort of terrible lack of quality.
Alan Carley?
Shane, you're not messing around tonight, are you? Straight in with a tough question. Poor Mark. He didn't know what to say.
Get off the fence, Carly. Come on. Yeah.
He's filibustering here.
Well, no, not at all. I'll tell you straight out, as I always do. I think it will be very, very tough for them to qualify. I would be kind of agreeing with Mark. France, I think it'll be a good thing if France blitz everybody and let us kind of fight it out then with the Netherlands and Greece. I don't think there's anything to fear from the Netherlands. And I think, again, as I said, when we go up against the top nations, we always do well and give a good account of ourselves. So the key games for me is that we're in a position that if we beat Greece and Gibraltar, we have to beat Greece. We can't let ourselves down against Greece and then expect to be in a position to qualify, because we won't be. So if we win those games that we wanted, that we should be winning, really, if we have aspirations to qualify, and then take her chances against the Netherlands. That would be my best hope, but I would agree with Mark, and I think everybody would. Like, if we were to finish second in this group, it would be absolutely unbelievable, Shane.
David Connolly, you know what's coming. You've played in the Eredivisie.
Yeah. Yeah, this is like speed dating, right? Well, look, I mean, you never know, but with the Dutch, because they're always prone to a crisis, and they might have another one by the time, you know, things come around. We've had a great record. I remember playing against them, you know, what, 20-odd years ago, probably one of our greatest ever results against them. So, you know, it's not out of the realms of possibility that we could go and give the Dutch a good crack at finishing second, but you would know that, you know, that's going to be a tough ask for us, right? But I'm hopeful, that's all I'd say, you know. But I'm not stupid. I know that the Dutch are a class team, like the French, so it'll be difficult, but we'll give it a best shot. I think we'll run them close, that's for sure.
David Connolly, thank you very much. Before we let Mark Langdon go, though, Mark, tonight, Scotland and Spain, how do you see that one going?
Yeah, I thought that Spain were very average when they beat Norway 3-0. Was on Saturday night. You know, it was two late goals from Davidson Hosselu that managed to put an unfair reflection, really, on the scoreline at 1-0. Sorloth missed a great chance, one that the injured Haaland probably would have taken. I felt they should have had a penalty when Odegaard was brought down by Rodri as well. So they were unlucky, Norway. So if Spain play like that, then Scotland have got a chance. I expect it to be a very similar game, really, to what we witnessed last night, where you've got one team that's got the ball and another team that, you know, is looking to shut them down. I wouldn't be amazed, you know, if Scotland got a positive result here. And if they do go down, it might be like by 1-0, a bit like what happened last night. Because, yeah, I'm not sure about Spain at the moment.
Wales and Latvia?
Yeah, I mean, Wales got a brilliant result away to Croatia. Did exactly what David Connolly was saying Ireland should have done, really, from set pieces. That's where they managed to get their equalising goal. I would expect Wales to win this game against Latvia. Latvia looked okay against us, I suppose, against Ireland the other night. But I would go for a Wales win.
Great stuff. Mark Langdon, thank you very much for joining us. Gents, just before we finish our football chat, I do just want to draw attention to a statement by James McLean that he issued on Instagram. And it is in relation to autism, because it is Autism Awareness Week, which began yesterday. So James McLean wrote on social media, "As you all know, my daughter Willow Ivy is autistic. The last 4 years have been life-changing in the most amazing way, but also very difficult at times, as her daddy watching her overcome so many obstacles in her life and learning how to manage the challenges she faces on a daily basis. The more Erin and I learned about autism, the more we began to recognise I was very similar to Willow in more ways than we thought. I see so many small traits in her that I see in myself, so I decided to go and get an ASD assessment. It's been a bit of a journey, and now having a diagnosis, I feel it's time to share it for the week that's in it. I've debated for a while going public and sharing this, as I've done this for Willow Ivy, to let her know that I understand and that being autistic won't and should never hold her back from reaching her goals and dreams," which I thought is very, very noteworthy and a very nice statement, I suppose, from James McLean there.
It most certainly is that. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break.
Game on, rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. And Ruby, you're going to put on your rugby, your former rugby player, you're going to put on your rugby hat.
At an amateur level, should
listen, you know, you're still something. It's more than I ever played. But listen, we will be hearing from Dougherty Wall, who was chatting to Michael Corcoran ahead of the Irish women's match. But I do just want to touch on, because it passed us by yesterday, Johnny Sexton's Leinster career unlikely to have a fairy tale end. That's very disappointing news, Ruby.
It is for Johnny, yeah, and for Leinster fans. But to be honest with you, Shane, when you looked at him on the pitch in the Six Nations decider against England, when he stood as he was talking to the physio, you knew he was in quite a bit of pain. You could see he was masking it, and to me, you could see the mental pain in his eyes over the physical pain in his body as I looked at him, knowing he was injured, knowing it was not a twinge, that there was more to it than that. And I could almost see him clocking in his head, how long is this going to take? How long will I be out? How long is the Champions Cup? When is Leinster season finished? You could really see him doing all the math as he was standing on the pitch, to be honest. And, you know, he hobbled off and came back on for presentations and strolled around the pitch at a very slow pace. But you could see it. And look, I suppose Does everyone get the Brian O'Driscoll send off? Probably not. But hopefully we'll have him back for the World Cup and he'll get the fairy tale ending he deserves there.
Or the Ruby Walsh send off?
Yeah, I had to come back from two broken legs to get the one I wanted, and just about got it. But look, you could see it in him, and I have full of admiration for him, as we were correspondent yesterday. Look at Seamus Coleman. I think sports people that keep dragging themselves back like that, I admire them. I know how hard it is.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. That's why I posed the question to you, Ruby. I wasn't putting you on the spot, but even to have that mindset of seeing it in his eyes. And
oh, you could. I think the one that jumped out at me was Paul O'Connell in the World Cup, and you could see him thumping the ground, yeah. And you knew there was more than physical pain in that.
And just to disappoint Leinster fans even more, see Murray Kinsler on Twitter had Johnny Sexton is being booked in to talk at a dinner in Jersey 2 days before the URC final, which is the last game of the season. So that suggests that there isn't much hope of him getting back in action, which is...
No, that's the other side of it with age. The older you get, unfortunately, the slower all those recoveries get.
Unfortunately, indeed, is the word. But meanwhile, in the TikTok Women's Six Nations, Ireland back row Dorothy Wall has been reflecting with Michael Corcoran on the opening round 31-5 defeat in Wales as France await Ireland in Musgrave Park this weekend.
Game on. Rugby.
Dorothy, can I talk to you about last Saturday specifically first? I would get the impression that there wasn't really overly a need for a video review, given the fact that you'd have known yourselves on Saturday that that wasn't ye in terms of the 23, in terms of what happened on the pitch. It must have been a huge degree of frustration after that match.
Well, I'd say there was definitely a need for a video review. We had a lot to look at, a lot to fix, analyse, talk, have a back and forth with people to see what we actually want to do. We obviously weren't happy. No team, no Irish team goes out to lose, and we take ownership of that we lost that game, and we intend on writing our own narrative in terms of how we turn up this weekend and in terms of how each of us has shown up to training today, how we train, how we implement the changes that we want. So it's very much a next job focus.
And has that been good for the group? Has that been good for the squad, the fact you've been able to thrash out the good, the bad and the ugly, if I can call it that?
Oh yeah, you have to mentally and physically prepare, but you also have to get through the tough part of looking at it and looking at where the deficits are. No one wants to admit that they weren't good enough on the day, but that was the simple fact of the matter. So it's been a reality check in terms of what we need to do better, and then it's implementing the changes we want. So the tough part of analysing, yeah, we get what we want out of that, and then you move into another tough part, which is implementing it and going at each other this week in preparation for France.
And how important is it that you don't go into your shell this week, that you don't sort of overcomplicate life from last week and you just go, you know what, we have a chance to do something about it this coming weekend?
Yeah, it's like you can't continue to think about the past, you have to learn from it. I think that's fairly evident in normal life, never mind in rugby circles, yeah. But like, you learn from what's happened, you move on and you try to do better next time, which is exactly what this team is doing. And we have a really good player group. Like, you know, we're some of my best friends in here, everyone is leaning on each other and trying, like, led by Nicola, who is driving this next job mentality in terms of analysis and how we can emotionally turn up and how we can be the best versions of ourselves next Saturday in every way.
And next Saturday, it's France.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Look, we don't have anything to lose. Mm. And I think that's a very dangerous position for any team to be in. I don't know if many people expect much from us, but we are working away in here to our damnedest to try and perform the best we can on Saturday. And I'm certainly riled up, and I think a lot of people are. You know, France is... they're a big team, they're good, they've shown that time and time again, and they play with that kind of French jouet flair, so we intend in bringing every bit of the fighting Irish flair that we have.
Is there a sense really that you didn't show the best side of yourselves last week, but the good news is that you've a chance to do something about it this week?
Yeah, of course. We didn't. We weren't where we wanted to be. No team wants to lose, especially in the first half, and we did fix things and it did get better in the second half, so we're hoping to build on that, and that it wasn't an entirely negative experience. Like, there was things that went well, and we don't want to just focus on the mistakes, but also what we did do well in that game. So both can be brought into Saturday.
And just a final question in terms of the venue. I mean, you've played there before. You've seen what the under-20s have done in terms of, you know, embracing, and the public down there embracing an Irish international team as well. And now it's your turn to get the public in that part of the world to come on board and help you out.
Yeah, like Musgrave Park is great. We were playing there recently for the Interbros. Like, we've seen the traction that was gotten from the 20s down there and how successful they were. And, you know, I'm Munster born and bred. There's a good Munster contingent in the Irish team at the moment. So a lot of people look forward to going down to Cork. And it's a great pitch. Like, you nearly feel like the crowd is with you, yeah, because it's so close. So yeah, we're at home. The French are coming to us. They're coming to our house. So that's how we're looking at it.
That was Dartey Wall speaking to Michael Corcoran a little earlier today. Don't forget, you can listen to live commentary of Ireland v France Saturday, 3:15 p.m. kickoff on RT Radio 1, and follow a live blog on the RT Sport website. Just a bit of rugby news from another province before we hit a break. Connacht have announced the appointment of former club captain John Muldoon to the coaching team on a 2-year deal. Muldoon will have responsibility for the line-out and maul, working in conjunction with Colm Tucker, who will remain in charge of the scrum and breakdown. Muldoon made an unrivalled contribution to Connacht rugby over a 15-year career, playing a record 327 times for the club and captaining the side to the historic Pro 12 Championship in 2016. We're going to be staying out west because Neil Ewing is up next on Gaelic Football.
Game on.
Gaelic Football.
Welcome back to Game On. So last night we ran out of time to get to Divisions 3 and Divisions 4 of the Football Leagues and to talk about those teams who have been promoted and demoted. But thankfully, Niall Ewing has agreed to come back on this evening, ex-former Sligo captain. With Sligo being promoted, it's great to have you, Neil. Thanks for taking our call again tonight.
Yeah, delighted to be here, Ruby, especially, as you say, after Sligo getting promoted, I think. Gladly come on every evening this week to talk about Sligo getting promoted.
I'm sure you would. Tony McEntee's done a great job to get you out of Division 4 up into Division 3.
Yeah, really has. You know, delighted for Tony and the management team. You know, he has a good team of guys around him there. You know, plenty of experience at higher levels. You know, Joe Keane involved at Mayo, Paul Dirk and Colin McFadden, who would have been obviously one All-Irelands with Donegal, and Sligo's own Noel Maguire. So, you know, a really strong background team there. But have to say, especially delighted for the players. You know, a lot of those guys would have came in as young fellas, you know, maybe 19, 20, 21, had their first year on the panel in 2019, when unfortunately we were relegated down to Division 4. So, you know, they've seen a lot of tough times, especially, you know, going through the COVID period. Unfortunately, there was a bit of an issue where Sligo were unable to field in Connacht Championship 2020 during that COVID year. So, you know, they've seen a lot of downs, but they've all kind of stuck at it. They really put in a lot of work behind the scenes when it wasn't easy to do work, you know, a lot of SNC work happening at home when gyms and stuff were closed. So yeah, I could talk about my delight for some of those lads all day. And then, you know, you have some older lads involved with the panel as well, you know, Caelan Cawley, Aidan Devaney, Peter Laffey's had a few injuries, he's stayed involved, Niall Murphy, you know, they've seen ups and downs. So yeah, very, very happy for all the lads. And, you know, I think as well it's important for Sligo because we have a generation of guys coming through who have won minor and under 20 kind of titles, who have played in Hogan Cup finals, and they need to be playing, coming into a team playing at the highest level possible. So Division 3, and, you know, let's be hopeful maybe Division 2 in a year or two time.
We will be talking about other counties, Neil, but just sticking with your own Sligo for the moment, that's what, 3 years now under Tony McEntee. Like, what has he actually brought to the panel? Has it been a case of blooding players in, or is it new ideas? And how big now, and try answer, I suppose, with your head over your heart, but how big is the genuine belief that you can make a Connacht final this year now?
Yeah, I suppose maybe to take that in parts, you know, what has Tony brought? You know, he's brought you know, that experience and that aura of an All-Ireland winner from his time with Armagh. Then, you know, obviously he managed St Bridget's up in Dublin, you know, gained a bit of experience there. He was a selector with Mayo, picked up another bit of experience there. So, you know, he had a familiarity with what was required at the top of the inter-county game. And I suppose he's just brought, and, you know, if I could sum it up in one word, and just a level of ambition, probably quiet ambition. And, you know, it was even a statement from the county board, you know, maybe at times over the last years, there's been periods where you would have questioned the county board's ambition, going out, getting Tony McEntee in, you know, after a poor 2 or 3 years, was a real statement of intent. And, you know, that ambition has filtered through to the players. It's helped some of those lads that I've mentioned previously stay involved, and, you know, it's give them that carrot. You know, he hasn't accepted any excuses, you know, real no-nonsense approach in his own kind of quiet way. So, you know, that has given Sligo the platform. You know, one guy I left out there was Sean Boyle, who's involved on the strength and conditioning. Also Alan Dunn on the physio and medical side of things. You know, they've helped the lads step things up to a new level. And, you know, keeping that playing group, same group of players together has been very important, because, you know, there's no point getting guys in, doing a year of strength and conditioning with them, losing them the next year and starting from scratch with a new batch of players. So, you know, he's shown that ambition, give the lads, you know, that vision for what he wants to achieve, and kept them involved for the 3 seasons. So, you know, it's great to see them get the reward and go up. In terms of, you know, looking ahead to a kind of final, it's an interesting one because, you know, obviously Sligo and Leitrim played the last league game there on Sunday, and, you know, many people would probably argue, and logically so, that it was a bigger game than, you know, a possible Connacht semi-final, Connacht Championship semi-final that's coming down the road, where Sligo could play Leitrim. You know, to get up to Division 3, to have a guaranteed standard of football next year is huge. But I know myself, the lads are going to go to Croke Park this week. You know, it's a bonus for them to get back to Croke Park after playing Talton Cup there last year. But their focus is going to be on Ruislip and a very, very tricky game with London just, what, six, seven days after the league final this weekend. And that's a game I know from being involved myself, you know, that trip over to London. No matter how strong you are, or maybe how weak London are, depending on the players they have available to them in a particular year, it's just a game you dread because it's a no-win situation. And, you know, I think London, their league form may not have reflected just how strong they are, the caliber of players they have. And it probably, even the way their form tapered off towards the end of the league, suggests a team that that'll probably even up their training load with an eye on targeting the Sligo game in Ruislip and, you know, the big scalp. It's an opportunity for Sligo and Leitrim to get to a Connacht final this year. But please have absolutely no doubt that New York and London are also looking at it as a huge opportunity for them to get to a Connacht final.
You sound worried about those games, Neil, but time will tell what happens. Oisín McConville's Wicklow obviously climbed out of Division 4 with Sligo, and that's because they beat Laois in the head-to-head. Would you be for the head-to-head rule, or do you think the team with the positive scoring points should be the ones that go up?
The head-to-head rule isn't ideal, you know, especially when it's a league where there's, you only have 7 games. But I think it's a better way to separate two teams who are level, because when you look at scoring difference, especially when you consider the National League is played January, February, March, you know, weather conditions can vary hugely. Like, and, you know, it's easy to go out, you know, maybe on a nice dry day if you're playing one of the weaker teams, conditions are perfect, you know, rack up even, you know, 3 or 4 extra scores because the weather is just that little bit better versus going out to play a team who you beat and you expect to beat by maybe a little bit more. You play them on a terrible stormy day and, you know, the scoring difference isn't as big. So, you know, I think the head-to-head is probably the fairest way of deciding it, but it's not ideal. And, you know, it's an amazing job that Oisín McConville has done since he came in there. Probably, again, slow to start the league, maybe reflecting just that bit of time it took him and his management team to get to know, I guess, the players in Wicklow, get to know their final squad and then get to know their team. And then, you know, the guys, the personalities within that team and how to use them best, you know, be that from the start, be that coming on as a sub. So, you know, they've definitely improved as the league has went on. Personally, I think Sligo and Laois were the two strongest teams in the division. But, you know, Laois slipped up in that home game, conceding the 2 goals to Wicklow. And, you know, Wicklow rightfully go up and get promotion to Division 3.
On Division 3, because I do want to throw a bit of Donegal managerial news your way, Neil, as well. Just, I suppose, on paper they are, but would you agree that Fermanagh and Cavan are the two strongest teams in Division 3, or is there a case of, oh, Westmeath had a bit of a free hit because of the Tailteann Cup win and so on?
Yeah, I think Westmeath, I wouldn't give Westmead a free hit. You know, maybe the team that, you know, I probably feel for above anyone that hasn't gone up is Down. You know, they were caught by a very, very late Sean Quigley goal against Fermanagh after dominating much of that game. But again, Conor Laverty has come in, and you know, while they didn't go up, they've definitely made progress and they seem to be building something. Down will be absolutely relishing having Donegal come to Newry in the Ulster Championship in 3-4 weeks time. But you know, you touched on Fermanagh there, and you know, you have to have huge admiration for him. We mentioned their neighbours Monaghan yesterday, but you know, Fermanagh are just you know, they're nearly a mirror image of that Monaghan team, and that they're just able to get the absolute maximum out of the players that they have available to themselves. And you know, Kieran Donnelly came in there as manager. It was a tough act to follow after Rory Gallagher, and you know, getting them to an Ulster final, and you know, the presence and the persona that Rory Gallagher has, you know, they were big shoes to fill. And you know, and you have to just admire Fermanagh going with another homegrown manager and getting, he's got them back up to Division 2. And you know, I think if you look at their playing population and their league status over the last number of years, they've put a lot of other counties to shame, and they're a county that, you know, you're really happy to see do well. And you know, you can see the pride their supporters have and what they're able to achieve with the resources that they have.
And Aidan O'Rourke will bring that Donegal team to Newry to face Down in the first round of the Ulster Championship. And how does he turn that Donegal team around after what can only be described as a very disappointing league campaign?
Very disappointing league campaign for Donegal. And you know, just Donegal GAA has had a disappointing few months in general, and you know, just, you know, too much talk about things that are happening off the pitch, and maybe too many people with agendas that are not centred on getting Donegal GAA, the Donegal footballers, to be the best team they can now and in the future. And you know, I think it was even disappointing, you know, from the players' point of view and the management point of view, how the news last week was handled. You know, reports of players' names being mentioned at a county board meeting who met with management, etc. You know, I think the management team and the players, as amateurs who have to get up in the morning and go to work, could do without that been you know, dealt with so publicly. You know, because there's a lot of things, a lot of people talk, and you know, these stories can grow legs. So you know, that was very badly handled by Donegal. But you know, I'd assume the fact that Aidan O'Rourke is staying on the county board seemed to be very keen to give the impression that they're very open into listening to the opinion of the players. So I assume the players are very keen for Aidan O'Rourke to stay on. I know it was agreed last week that the training camp they had planned for Carton House in the coming week or two is going ahead. So you know, I think I can imagine a real bunker mentality at that training camp for the 3 or 4 days they spend in Carton House. Aidan O'Rourke has a lot of experience. You know, he's been he's managed Loud, he's been a selector in Kildare, Down and Armagh. So you know, huge knowledge of the game. You know, he's involved in Queen's University as well. So you know, very at the forefront of kind of all, you know, the tactical innovations in the game as well. So he won't lack for any knowledge. And yeah, I think it's just going to be interesting to see where they go. That game in Newry is going to be a cracker, because it's two teams that really have a point to prove going into it. Down are going to be itching to show that they're maybe better than their Division 3 status, and Donegal players after the last few weeks are going to have to put in a performance that's going to restore a lot of pride in the jersey and get the supporters back behind the players and the county again.
Indeed they are. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. My apologies to Bettis and Silva, and indeed the news, for coming to you a wee bit late. But for myself, Ruby, and all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. RTE 2FM.